The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the main headline, Paying It Forward for Zuela Bonzi, Zuela Williams Community Service has sustained business. And this article is part of the continuing series, 52 Shades of Success. It begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Paying It Forward Pays Back. For Zuela Bonzi, Zuela Williams, Community Service has sustained business at her eateries. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the 52-week project showcases accomplishments, challenges, and opportunities of individuals and businesses run by people of color, women, immigrants, veterans, representatives of the LGBTQ plus community, and a few other groups forwarding the mission of diversity, equity, and inclusion in the greater Raleigh-Durham metro area. The project will also delve into important trends and issues relating to DEI. Opening a restaurant was one of the most challenging things Zuela Bonzi, Zuela Williams, had ever done. Now, in the shadow of the pandemic, operating her restaurants is even more challenging than the initial startup was in 2018. More often than not, the chef, owner from Zimbabwe, has to cancel plans because she's in the kitchen at 5 a.m., covering shifts for employees unable to show up. On a day-to-day basis, it has become more difficult. Food costs have gone up unbelievably. Supplies and labor are problems, and revenue has gone down. We're operating our restaurant at 40 to 50% of what business was before COVID, and some weeks is less, Williams says, referring to her original restaurant, Zuela's Peri Peri Kitchen in Durham. Last summer, she and her husband, Leonardo Williams, who was elected to the Durham City Council in 2021, opened their second location, Zuela's Cafe, at the Duke University Divinity School. The 4,000-square-foot Peri Peri Kitchen can host events up to 100 people. The Duke location seats 160 inside with capacity for another 200 outside. And the whirlwind of new beginnings shows no sign of slowing. A third restaurant, Zuela's Ikea, is slated to open this summer at the American Tobacco Campus in the Bull City. The couple's response to COVID has been more pirouette than pivot. Unlike most restaurant operators who transitioned to curbside pickup when on-premise dining was shuttered, they realized almost immediately that model was not going to sustain their business. 3 days into not having customers in our restaurant, we realized we were not going to make it if we had to depend on curbside, Zuela Williams says. Catering, which was also a significant share of the pre-pandemic business model, came to an equally abrupt halt. Over 2 days, more than 50 catering orders were canceled. We started looking for contracts to provide food for businesses. We were contacting churches, nonprofits, anything we could do, Williams recounts. A week into it, we got into a lucrative contract, and then we began doing meals for more places. It wasn't as profitable as the restaurant had been, but it was high volume. Across all of 2020, that's what we did, and we stopped relying on curbside orders. It was a similar mentality of ingenuity and creativity that powered them into opening their first location. We needed $250,000 to open, and we didn't have even a quarter of that, she says, and there was no money to be borrowed. We tried so many times, but there was no way to get financial assistance. You think you will get a loan, and contractors will line up, and there will be painters to paint the walls. That's what I thought until I opened a restaurant, and I quickly learned, in order to make my dream a reality, we would have to do it by ourselves. To build revenue, Williams started catering in 2016. With help from their parents and by cashing in Leonardo's retirement account from his teaching career, they pulled together finances to get started, and they shopped resourcefully, purchasing equipment from closed restaurants and auctions. We went from auction to auction and stored equipment in our garage before we had the restaurant. We refurbished pallets from behind grocery stores and were building tables from any material we could find, Zuela Williams says. Like the large wooden spools used for electric cables and wire products, which they found discarded in eastern North Carolina, where Leonardo grew up, and converted to high tops, now one of the most complimented features of the restaurant's decor. We built the walls ourselves, we redid the floors, we bought all used equipment, and we made it work by any means necessary. Within 12 to 18 months of opening, they were turning a profit, and then it was 2020. What carried them through were relationships they'd built and a pay it forward spirit that transitioned from providing free meals for people in need to a service contract. 3 months before COVID, my husband called and said, "There is a community in Durham that is in need and we need to help them." He was very frustrated and didn't know what we could do, just that we needed to do something, Williams says. It was the McDougal Terrace community, and they started by cooking rice and beans for the residents. We became ambassadors to the McDougal Terrace community, and the minute we started asking for help from other people, it caught on like fire. People started coming to volunteer, to cook, and make deliveries. The Williamses provided free meals for 3 months, partnering with many organizations along the way. When COVID hit, we got a call that the residents were still in hotel rooms because their apartments were being renovated and asking us to continue to provide meals for the community. But this time, it was a paid contract, Williams says. We couldn't believe it. The person said, "You did such a good deed, it is time to pay it back." And that's what saved us. "Everything that has happened for us is because of relationships we built. One of my dreams was to operate within Duke," she adds. "It's been a beautiful partnership, and the opportunity came right on time to help sustain our company." Carl Weissner, Associate Dean for Finance and Administration at Duke Divinity School, agrees that Zuele's Cafe has been a positive addition. "Their catering services were very popular even before they moved in, and they have navigated the challenges of opening and operating the cafe during the pandemic with wisdom and grace. On a campus with many great dining options, Zuele's Cafe attracts students, staff, and faculty from all across the university." Despite stark challenges, Zuele's remains one of the most popular restaurant operations in the Triangle. In 2021, she was voted Best Chef in Durham County by readers of Indie Week. And readers of Durham Magazine named Zuele's among the best restaurants for vegetarian and for catering. At each of the restaurants, Williams has created menus filled with authentic South African cuisine, reminiscent of growing up in Zimbabwe, where she lived until coming to attend college at NC Central University in 1999. "I put my own rendition on things. I don't have the discipline of following the recipe, but I find tricks from the traditions and ways people cook back home," she says. Her first cooking memory was surprising her mother with a dinner of collards and scrambled eggs. "That was the beginning of how much I wanted to be an artist when it came to putting ingredients together and try different things," Williams says. "For as long as I remember, I enjoyed being in the kitchen, even when not doing it for income, just for creating." While the foods veer exotic, think chakalaka, jollof rice, dovi collards, biltong jerky, or an entree of braised oxtail, sourcing ingredients has not been as difficult as one might expect. "A lot of Indian stores carry the stuff I used to eat, and we found a butcher from Zimbabwe in Aden who does authentic South African Boerewors sausage," she says. That butcher, Brian Agnew, came to Aden in 1987 and has been the proprietor of Sumrel's Country Sausage for 25 years. "Zuele's has been buying our sausage for a long time," he says, adding that the shop's clientele includes people from all over the country who've become loyal patrons when they travel through the state. "We are a small shop, just 10,000 square feet, but our sales are around $700,000 to $800,000 a year," he says. One of Williams's objectives at Zuele's is to transport her guests to a different culture. "I think if I had opened 20 years ago, it would have been more challenging," she says. "Now people are welcoming ethnic food and willing to try different foods. We make food as authentic as possible and introduce people to new flavors that take you to Africa." And there are also two short stories along with the 52 Shades of Success section. Belk further expanding Black-owned brands at boutique. Belk's Culture Shop, a curated boutique featuring Black-owned brands that launched on the retailer's website during Black History Month 2021, has announced the addition of more than a dozen diverse-owned vendors. The brands feature products across home, apparel, beauty, and accessory categories and honor the cultures of underrepresented communities. Among the new vendors is SPGBK Watches, founded in 2012 by Kwame Molden and Maurice Davis, childhood friends who grew up in Fayetteville. Their company, based in Charlotte, creates colorful watches that draw from their experiences growing up in North Carolina. "We want our customers to feel represented and at home when they shop at Belk," said Chris Colby, Executive Vice President and Chief Merchandising Officer at Belk. "By partnering with a diverse group of business owners, we do just that." Affordable housing project coming to Chapel Hill. A $23.4 million affordable housing project is underway in Chapel Hill. The Homestead Gardens community will be developed on land owned by the town of Chapel Hill in partnership with the Homestead Housing Collaborative, a coordinated initiative between four nonprofit agencies that share strong ties to Orange County and across the Triangle: Self-Help, Community Home Trust, Habitat for Humanity, and CASA NC, which seeks to provide access to affordable housing for at-risk and homeless people in Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill, compose the Homestead Housing Collaborative. The development, located at 2200 Homestead Road in Chapel Hill, will provide a collection of rental and home ownership opportunities to serve target populations from extremely low income to moderate income. Initial plans call for roughly 117 units, and development is slated to begin early this year. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Raleigh native to debut HBO show. The frenzy around stocks such as GameStop caught the attention of a Raleigh investment strategist, and he has done a film about it. Burke Koontz of Raleigh is the co-founder of Biltmore Films, which has produced Gaming Wall Street, a two-part documentary that will debut in March on HBO. The film details how the intense battles between Wall Street and online traders caused wild fluctuations in stock prices of companies such as GameStop. "We love telling stories, and because of our day jobs, we happen to tell financial stories pretty well," Koontz says. "Fortunately for us, not that many film people can do both." Koontz is an advisor at Trust Company of the South. The film is directed by Tobias Demmel. Biltmore Films' last film was Betting on Zero in 2017, which detailed the showdown between Herbalife and investor Bill Ackman, who thought the company was a scam. Bobblehead celebrates President Andrew Johnson. Raleigh's Andrew Johnson isn't one of America's most celebrated presidents, but he's getting some love in a new line of presidential bobbleheads. The National Bobblehead Hall of Fame and Museum, based in Milwaukee, released a full line of presidential bobbleheads on President's Day, including neglected presidents such as Johnson. Johnson became president after Abraham Lincoln's assassination and visited Raleigh in 1867 to celebrate a new grave marker for his father, who had died in 1812. But as president, Johnson was widely unpopular. He was impeached and survived in a Senate trial by a single vote. A home believed to be his birthplace is at the Mordecai Historic Park. The bobbleheads stand 8 inches tall and cost $30. Fayetteville food and hockey. For one night, the Fayetteville Marksman hockey team will rebrand as the Carolina Reapers and host a food-themed tailgate party prior to their game. Fayetteville restaurants and breweries will take part in the first Fayetteville Eats event before the Marksmen or Reapers game against the Birmingham Bulls on March 19. The festival will be held from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. before the game. The Marksmen are undergoing the one-day rebrand in homage to the Carolina Reaper, the hottest pepper in the world. The Marksmen host different themed nights throughout the season. The Fayetteville Eats Festival will be held one day after Dad Bod Appreciation Night at the rink. January numbers looked promising. Here's some good news for the ongoing economic recovery in North Carolina. A new survey finds most businesses in the state hit their revenue projections to start the year. The Business Pulse survey, administered by the North Carolina Department of Commerce, found 69% of businesses hit or exceeded their revenue goals in January, up from 65% in December. And 46% of responding businesses plan to raise wages in the next 6 months, with 46% also planning to increase their staffing levels. The survey also found that about 25% of hours worked in January were done remotely, up slightly from December, and 64% of respondents said maintaining adequate staffing levels remains a concern, but the figure is down from 69% in October. Golfer Reps Local Company. A Raleigh event company is joining the ranks of those that sponsor a professional golfer. The special event company has struck a deal with Tim Herron, a four-time PGA tournament winner who is now on the Champions Tour. The deal includes branding and business development opportunities. "It's rare for a small business to sponsor a PGA professional, and we're grateful for this opportunity," special event company CEO Sally Webb Barry says. We not only share a love of golf with Tim, but also a love and appreciation for creative storytelling, which makes this relationship such a good fit. Webb is married to Grant Barry, a longtime PGA caddy. And finally, McDonald's gives Shaw Band a lift. A historically black university in Raleigh has received a grant from a global fast food giant. Platinum Sound, the marching band at Shaw University, landed $100,000 from McDonald's during a send-off ceremony February 19 as the band was preparing to leave for the CIAA basketball tournament. The funding will provide scholarships to band members, create recruitment opportunities, and cover the costs of replacing some outdated equipment and instruments, according to a statement from McDonald's. The company decided to make the donation while filming the marching band for a national McDonald's commercial that aired in December. "This grant is beyond anything we could have imagined," says band director Andre King. "It means everything to these students who grind day in and day out to bring energy and excitement to others to get so much love and support back from McDonald's and the community." And now we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Caleb Harshberger. Next steps revealed for Glenn Lennox. Grubb Properties has big plans for a revitalized community. More details have been revealed about the ongoing redevelopment of the Glen Lennox community in Chapel Hill. Grubb Properties kicked off the year by starting work on a seven-story apartment complex called Link Calix. Since then, the Charlotte-based developer has unveiled plans for the next two buildings, green space, and three future tracts of land. The latest plans call for another apartment complex and a six-story, 123,000-square-foot office building with ground floor retail and a green space to serve as the centerpiece for Phase 2 of Glen Lennox. Grubb also plans to renovate the existing 30,000-square-foot retail center. "This is really the start of the 18-acre mixed use," says Joe Dye, executive vice president at Grubb Properties. "We've been active master planning this for 3 years." Work on the newest apartment complex, which will have roughly 300 units, is scheduled to begin later this year. Construction on the office building is set to start in 2023. Grubb Properties hopes to open the first apartments in 2023 and to complete the second apartment building, office building, and green space the following year. All this construction still leaves three parcels on the western portion of the property, one slated for office, one for a hotel, and a third for apartments and townhomes, for a lower-density transition into a neighboring community. Grubb Properties hopes to see these parcels completed by 2026 and is in talks with development partners now. The company is also working on extensive infrastructure upgrades with an eye for pedestrian and bicycle design. Grubb has brought on a Danish firm called Copenhagen Z's that specializes in pedestrian and cyclist-friendly engineering and design. The company is also expanding a nearby greenway that will ultimately connect Glen Lennox with Meadowmount, opening up additional non-automotive transit opportunities in Chapel Hill. Phase 2 of Glen Lennox follows the completion of the Gwendolyn office building and the Link Apartments Linden. Grubb Properties is also planning a third phase for Glen Lennox. Dye says the bulk of the remaining land will be residential, with one or two parcels remaining that could accommodate additional office space. Raleigh eyes options for land near Dix Park. The Raleigh City Council voted recently to allow staff to begin drafting a rezoning request for three city-owned properties near Dorothea Dix Park. The new zoning would allow for additional density on the parcels and could bring around 400 new affordable units to the city. The properties include 1500 South Wilmington Street, includes 9.25 developable acres, and the city is proposing rezoning the property for residential mixed use up to five stories high. 15 Summit Avenue totals 0.67 acres, and the city is looking to rezone the property for residential mixed use up to four stories high. And the Waterworks Street property is situated on 1.2 acres, and the city also wants to rezone it for residential mixed use up to four stories high. Site goes from 43-story tower to seven stories. The third time may be the charm when it comes to developing a Raleigh property in a prime location. The property, once slated for a 43-story tower across from Crabtree Valley Mall, has landed its latest development vision, with the landowner now proposing a seven-story building on the site. On February 2nd, an LLC addressed to Shaman Hotels of Chester, Virginia, filed plans for Crabtree Creek Multifamily, calling for a mixed-use apartment building plus a structured parking deck. The property is situated on nearly 5 acres at 4501 Creedmoor Road, next to the Crabtree Terrace building and across the road from Crabtree Valley Mall, which is up for sale. The new proposal is the latest development pitch for the vacant property. Plans for a 43-story high-rise fell through in 2008. That was followed by a plan for an 18-story hotel, which also was unsuccessful. Triangle homes continue to sell at a blistering pace. Homes in the Triangle continue to fly off the shelves as competition for a dwindling supply of homes ratchets up bidding wars, leaving available homes just days on the market before being bought up. According to a report by local real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson, homes in the Triangle spent an average of 20 days on the market last month, well below the 2021 monthly average of 40. Developers plan downtown Cary mixed-use project. A pair of Triangle developers are moving ahead with plans for a new mixed-use development in downtown Cary after years of planning and preparation in town. Earlier this year, Northwoods Associates LLC and Northview Partners filed site plans for the long-awaited Northwoods Jordan mixed-use development, calling for a 195-unit apartment building, 80,000-square-foot mixed-use office building, and a parking deck. The developers hope to kick off construction by early next year and expect the full build-out to take around 3 years. The project has been in the works for more than a decade, and portions of the site have been in Northwood's George Jordan's family for generations. And now we have a section called He Said It. It's a quote from Highwoods Properties president and CEO Ted Klink on moving his company's headquarters to the Wells Fargo Capital Center at 150 Fayetteville Street in downtown Raleigh. "We're excited to get downtown. We're already starting to see activity pick up down there. We're excited to be a part of the return to activity downtown." And finally, a big number, $44 million. An LLC addressed to The Beach Company, a Charleston, South Carolina investment firm, has paid $44 million for the 200-unit North Oaks Landing Apartments, or $220,000 per unit. The property is situated on nearly 20 acres at 2038 Quail Forest Drive in North Raleigh, bifurcated by Forest Oaks Drive. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. The first headline: new USGA golf house hopes to open in 2024. Project could be ready for next U.S. Open at Pinehurst No. 2. If all goes according to plan, there will be a notable addition to Pinehurst when the village hosts the U.S. Open Championship in 2024. The United States Golf Association's much-anticipated Golf House Pinehurst project has completed construction documents and is getting ready to open bids for vendors. The project is scheduled to break ground in May or June and be complete by the end of 2023, says Michael Lee, who is leading the project for the USGA. "We really are starting in earnest on the construction of the project," Lee says. Golf House Pinehurst, described as a $36 million investment, will include office space, a visitor center museum, and a test center. The latter will be used to test golf equipment made by manufacturers to ensure it's in compliance with USGA rules. The testing center, currently in Liberty Corner, New Jersey, will relocate to Pinehurst, Lee says. A couple of project partners are already on board, including Raleigh-based architecture firm Clearscapes and Gilbane Building Company of Providence, Rhode Island, which is in charge of the construction of the project. Brandy Thompson, principal at Clearscapes, says much thought was put into the design for the golf house Pinehurst to make sure it feels like it belongs in Pinehurst, with elements such as deep porches, which are found throughout the South. And on the landscaping side of things, Rand Jarris, a former USGA employee who is serving as a consultant for the organization, says an effort is being made to restore the longleaf pine habitat on the property that was once abundant in Pinehurst but has largely disappeared. Engineering firm buys space in Southern Pines, eyes expansion. A Moore County engineering firm is planning to relocate within the county. An LLC addressed to LKC Engineering, which currently has an office in Aberdeen, purchased the building at 390 West Pennsylvania Avenue in Southern Pines for $1.75 million, according to a deed filed February 7. "We bought that property with the intention of doing significant renovations and putting our office there," says Adam Kiker, principal at LKC. LKC specializes in engineering and landscape architecture and works for local governments in North Carolina and South Carolina. The company has 50 employees now, and the new office will be built for about 80 employees. Kiker says giving LKC the ability to hire more people The development timeline for moving into the new facility is 18 months, he adds. North State plans for expansion. An internet service provider with a growing North Carolina presence is beefing up its broadband infrastructure in outlying areas of the Triangle and Triad. North State is expanding fiber lines into areas within Guilford, Alamance, Orange, and Wayne counties, the company says. The effort will add more than 53,000 homes and businesses to its coverage area by mid-2023. In Guilford, Alamance, and Orange counties, parts of Burlington, Gibsonville, Elon, Whitsett, and Mebane will be added. In Wayne County, about 14,000 homes and businesses in Goldsboro will be eligible to utilize the new fiber capabilities. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Jim Anthony, CEO and founder of APG Capital, on a recent $10 million purchase his firm made in Youngsville. The land sits next to a planned 362-unit residential community also being developed by APG. The 60,000-square-foot office building is likely to become part of a future amenity center, co-working center, and maybe even some residential units on the top floor. And finally, we have a big number, 1.5 million. The square footage of industrial space East Coast Logistics Park in Dunn could include. The land sits next to the Rooms to Go facility on I-95. And now we turn to the On Travel Tech page written by Lauren Onasorge. The first headline, employers should weigh their options. As mask mandates end, employers prepare for friction. Raleigh Mayor Mary Ann Baldwin has announced Raleigh will end its mask mandate on February 25 at 5 p.m. And as the city drops the policy, attorneys are expecting some friction, and that could mean liabilities for Triangle companies. When the mask mandate drops, all the employers in the city are going to decide, do we keep it or do we drop it, says Patty Bartis, an attorney at Parker Poe in Raleigh, and you're never going to please everybody. At issue is guidance from the Centers for Disease Control, which continues to state that mask wearing when you can't social distance is a best practice. As Occupational Safety and Health Administration regulations require companies to provide a safe workplace to all employees, it's very possible that if employers drop mask mandates, they may get complaints from employees, and employees could call OSHA, Bartis says. Bartis recommends employers think specifically about their own workplaces. Is it an office that's spread out where distancing is easy? Or is it a manufacturing line where workers are standing next to each other for hours on end? Not every employer needs to do the same thing, Bartis says. Regardless of what an employer decides, there are decisions employees can make on their own, such as wearing a mask anyway. Bartis encourages concerned employees to preemptively have conversations with their bosses about safety precautions, even the possibility of remote work. Many of the nation's largest employers are dropping the mask mandates. At Amazon, fully vaccinated workers no longer have to wear face coverings. At Walmart, a similar move was recently announced to lift mask rules for vaccinated workers. And JPMorgan Chase, which is expanding its local retail branch network, joined a handful of other Wall Street firms, such as Goldman Sachs and the New York Stock Exchange, in recently dropping its mask mandate. VC-backed job totals in North Carolina reach 76,000-plus, ranks among top in U.S. A new report bodes well for the growing startup scene in the Triangle, particularly when it comes to the jobs venture-backed companies are creating compared to other regions. A report out of the National Venture Capital Association, Venture Forward, and the University of North Carolina Keenan Institute of Private Enterprise shows venture capital-backed companies accounted for 76,700 jobs in the state in 2020. More than 14,500 jobs were in the 2nd Congressional District, which includes Raleigh. Compare that to just over 12,600 in District 12, which includes the Charlotte Metro, and just over 8,000 in District 6, which includes Greensboro. Greg Brown, executive director of the Keenan Institute for Private Enterprise, says it's less of a surprise and more of a quantification of what most people who follow venture capital know. A lot of high-growth companies are VC-backed. Business travel at RDU still comes up short. Business traffic continues to lag as Raleigh-Durham International Airport works toward a post-pandemic comeback. Airport officials say more than 637,000 passengers flew through RDU in January, amounting to 64% of 2019 levels for the same month. Part of the problem, national numbers for corporate travel bookings were just 53% of 2019 levels in January. Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority CEO Mike Landguth told the airport board. And we have a section called He Said It, a quote from Sam Bratton, CEO of Wake Stone, speaking after the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality denied Wake Stone the necessary permit to open a quarry on land it's leasing from Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Bratton says the plan is to appeal. The quote, there is no contingency plan. And finally, a tweet of the week from Tim Sweeney at Tim Sweeney Epic. I don't ask for much. I just want to be able to write code as prolifically as John Williams writes music when I'm 90 years old. And now we turn to the On Retail Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. The main headline, Triangle remembers Rye's Biscuit founder, Tom Ferguson, creator of a beloved local brand, dies at age 57. The Triangle's restaurant scene received a stunning blow February 18 when Tom Ferguson, who founded the Rye Southern Biscuits and Righteous Chicken brand and saw it become a beloved local staple, died at the age of 57. Ferguson founded Rye's 10 years ago and expanded the business to 16 stores and over 100 franchise locations under contract. Ferguson got his start working for Scott Howell at former Durham restaurant Nana's in the 1990s. All of us were just like a family, says Seth Kingsbury, who worked with Ferguson at Nana's. I think back to those days and it was unlike anything I've ever experienced. Described as a good old boy from Texas by former business partner Brian Botker, Ferguson was an airborne ranger in the U.S. Army and graduated from the Culinary Institute of America. Ferguson also helped found Only Burger, a food truck turned brick-and-mortar concept located in Durham in 2008 with Botcher. In 2012, Ferguson created Rye's Biscuits and Donuts with one location in a South Durham shopping center. The Southern Fair was instantly popular, and the business made just over $1 million in revenue the first year. Ferguson sold his first franchise in 2015. The company started its national expansion in 2017. Current locations are in Virginia, Maryland, Georgia, Tennessee, Kansas, and Oklahoma. Triangle locations include Briar Creek, two in Durham, two in Raleigh, Morrisville, and Holly Springs. Tom was a fearless visionary, a leader, a mentor, and a devoted husband and father, Rye said in a statement. The Rye's franchise owners, employees, and the people Tom worked with over the years all mourn his loss. Advance Auto sees record year, plans more stock buybacks. Advance Auto Parts reported record earnings results across all key metrics for 2021. The earnings report released February 14 also bets on a positive 2022 for the Fortune 500 company, headquartered at North Hills in Raleigh. The auto parts retailer is substantially stronger and better positioned today than it was pre-pandemic, CEO Tom Greco said. The 2022 outlook given in the report reflects Advance Chief Financial Officer Jeff Shepard's optimism in the company's ability to build on 2021's growth. This year's goals include opening between 125 and 150 new stores. Last year, Advance Auto Parts opened 75 new independent CarQuest locations, 31 Advance Auto Parts stores, and 8 new WorldPack branches. The company said 43 locations were closed or consolidated last year. A year ago, Advance Auto Parts said it wanted to open between 50 and 100 new locations in 2021. The company now has just under 5,000 locations. We're encouraged by the first 4 weeks of 2022 with comp sales trending above the top end of our full-year guidance range as the growth drivers of our industry remain positive, Shepard said in a statement. But rising inflation is a concern. The company's guidance for 2022 takes inflation into account, Shepard said. Pop-up plans brick-and-mortar location. Fine Folk, a pandemic-born pop-up restaurant operating out of a bake shop, Union Special in Raleigh, will soon have its own brick-and-mortar location. Owner Chris Lopez will be opening the new spot in a 3,000-square-foot space in Gateway Plaza. The current menu includes fried tortellini, mushroom stroganoff, and loaded steak fritters. Fine Folk will serve liquor, with a focus on wine, and open from 5 to 10 p.m. Thursday through Sunday. Fine Folk is funded by several private investors, including Union Special Owner Andrew Ullum. Lopez declines to discuss financials between the two, but said that Ullum has been more than generous. And in a section called They Said It, Buena Papa Fry Bar owners James and Johanna Winden are opening a second location in the streets of South Point Mall and deciding to franchise the business. The first location is in Morgan Street Food Hall in Raleigh. Franchising will give us the opportunity to share our dream with so many others and watch their journey unfold. And finally, we have a big number, 12.8%. That's how much the price of meat, poultry, fish, and eggs increased in November 2021 from the previous year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food at Home Index. The labor shortage, supply chain issues, and high demand are causing a jump in grocery store prices. And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Education page, written by Zach Izzone. Shaw taking fresh look at its campus. HBCU seeks to capitalize on its real estate. Shaw University, located in the heart of downtown Raleigh, is ready to reimagine its campus as nearby development booms. Last month, the historically black university selected Hyatt Brown, a national advisory firm in Washington, D.C., to review how the university is using its 28 acres and whether the land could be better utilized. The process is intended to unlock potential opportunities to generate revenue and improve the experience of its students. The process follows guidance the university received from the Urban Land Institute in the fall of 2019. The report from the ULI that painted a grim picture of Shaw's financial situation and recommended, among other actions, that the university sell off some assets to generate revenue. But the situation has since improved, says Kevin Sullivan, the school's vice president for real estate and strategic development. In March 2021, Shaw had $22 million of debt forgiven as part of federal relief tied to the pandemic. Instead of going straight to selling property, the university is looking for Hyatt Brown to review its downtown land, including how it's being utilized and any deferred maintenance, to help see if there are better uses for the land. We're not going to prejudge the outcome, but our going-in position is that we don't think the 150-plus-year-old institution should be selling its real estate, says Jay Brown, the firm's chairman. It should be figuring out a way to leverage it, optimize it, and create value, but without selling it. Creating value from the land without selling it could mean signing ground leases with developers who could build amenities that could benefit both Shaw's students and the surrounding community. Shaw wouldn't dictate what's developed, but would lay out broad sets of objectives for specific sites and find a partner who shares the university's vision, Brown says. Brown's firm has worked with Howard University in Washington, D.C. on a similar effort. The university has taken old dormitories and turned them into multifamily properties through ground leases to private developers. Howard also turned parking lots into mixed-use facilities. With the amount of interest in development downtown, Shaw could be poised for a similar transformation. Morrisville drug maker hits halfway mark. Locus Biosciences, a Morrisville-based biotech, is more than halfway through a potential $20 million raise. The company has raised about $10.6 million of equity from three investors and could raise an additional $9.4 million, according to a February 14th filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. This raise follows the company securing a $25 million credit facility with a venture lender in the fall. At the time, Paul Garofalo, company co-founder and CEO, said the financing from Hercules Capital would support both the manufacturing and discovery process. The spin-out from NC State University has secured a number of significant deals since to advance its development of engineered bacteriophage treatments for bacterial and inflammatory diseases. For instance, its first asset is under a $144 million program with the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. Duke UNC get $1.2 billion in NIH funding. Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill were two of the highest recipients of funding from the National Institutes of Health last year. The NIH, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, awards public and private institutions with funding to drive various research efforts. In 2021, the agency awarded Duke about $731.2 million, which made the university the third highest recipient of funding in the country. UNC Chapel Hill ranked number 17 and received about $498.5 million. And in a section called He Said It, the quotes from Mark Hensley, CEO of Veloxis Pharmaceuticals, on the potential upside of an immunosuppressant the company is developing for kidney transplant patients called VEL-101. The company hopes the drug, which will enter phase one clinical trials this year, could extend the life of recently transplanted kidneys. There's a large group of patients on a wait list to get a kidney transplant, so there's a huge shortage of organs. Some of that shortage is because kidneys don't last as long as we need them to. And finally, a big number, $11.9 million. That's how much Durham company Babies, spelled B-A-E-B-I-E-S, has raised from 87 investors, according to a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission dated February 10. This follows the company closing a $28.3 million raise in May 2021. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Would Apple, Amazon go through with it? A note from Bloomberg caught my attention this week. According to the financial news and research site, the 10 biggest stock buybacks during the fourth quarter 2021 came primarily from big tech companies such as Cisco, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Meta. But the company that was the most active in buying back shares was Apple. Apple used up almost $21 billion in buying its own shares during the quarter. The value is equivalent to almost 25% of all S&P companies' share buyback activity. It's really remarkable. But shoring up its stock price is a far different strategy than, say, retaining and recruiting talent for Apple, Amazon, and others. And therein lies the big dilemma for these giant tech companies that have recently announced billion-dollar-plus new campus expansions across the country. Those expansion announcements, for the most part, were made before the pandemic's full impact became clear. And in the past 2 years, a supermajority of the country's 164 million civilian workers have found themselves working remotely or some on a hybrid formula that required workers to come to the office sporadically during the week. Excluding the hospitality, travel, and restaurant sectors for most big and small companies, 2021 has been a solid fiscal performer. I don't have to provide you with numbers, just look at the performance of the public companies and ask the smaller companies if they are looking for labor. But most importantly, these profit numbers were achieved with people working from their homes and physically coming to their offices once in a while. Fast forward to what companies such as Apple and Amazon now have to deal with. Making sense of whether building ginormous new campuses in Research Triangle Park or Austin, Texas, or Nashville, Tennessee that cost billions of dollars is the best way to recruit and keep talent. For now, the answer is an emphatic no. Forcing workers to come to the office inevitably would mean losing some of the best workers on the payroll. A study released on February 22 by Ladders, a career site for jobs, showed the number of hybrid jobs available with a pay of $100,000 or more in North America broke an all-time record in February. Ladders adds that its data scientists completed the review after analyzing 5 million job listings on the site. California, Florida, Texas, New York, and Massachusetts offered the most hybrid career opportunities. So why would Apple and Amazon take the risk right now to build new campuses equipped to hold thousands of people? Apple CEO Tim Cook has been consistent in his messaging that Apple employees will eventually have to return to its offices. Apple is on the record of giving an option to work remotely for 2 days a week. But that still may not be enough. A study conducted last year by a group that caters to engineers concluded almost 8 out of 10 software engineers prefer a remote work environment. That's the talent Apple, Amazon, and other tech giants need to stay competitive. In fact, Amazon already is stating it may lose talent if it rejects remote work. Maybe giant campuses are needed to separate one from the other when it comes to a collaborative environment. Free lunches, foosball tables, and daily yoga classes. But ask the workers today and they would rather have the flexibility of working from their homes. In the end, 2022 may become a watershed year in terms of economic development. As always, manufacturers, the goods-producing companies, will continue to expand and relocate to cities of their choice. But companies that rely on coding, business, and support services, the largest segment of the U.S. economic growth, may have a far different plan for their workers. And now we turn to our general news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Global insurance firm slashes Raleigh office footprint, by Lauren Onasorge. 4 years after picking Raleigh over Atlanta for what was described as a 365-job expansion, a global insurance firm is slashing its local footprint in half. Arch Capital Services, which was approved for $6.8 million in state incentives back in 2018, has permanently vacated two of its four floors at the Dillon in downtown Raleigh's warehouse district. The company did not provide a lot of details February 22, but says the plan is to sublease out the floors. "We're interested in finding the right partner for a sublease at the Dillon," spokesman Greg Hare says. "However, the opportunity needs to make sense both culturally and financially." There are no plans to vacate its lease obligations as it looks to sublease, the company says. The news comes a month after the firm confirmed it would be reconsidering its real estate strategy. The company, which never actually received any incentive dollars from the state, has already told state officials it would be unable to meet employment and investment targets. Last month, Hare put the blame on the after effects of the pandemic. "Like many employers, Arch is implementing a more flexible work location policy and newly allows many positions to work remotely rather than full-time in Arch's offices," Hare says said in January. "As a result of these changed conditions, we no longer expect to achieve the staffing levels required to obtain the grants related to the Raleigh office." Arch has not released a current headcount for its local operations, but state records show that as of September, the firm had 127 employees in Raleigh, far short of the 225 required to meet its incentives targets. When Arch announced the new Raleigh office in 2018, the firm said that its insurance, reinsurance, and corporate non-underwriting segments that were operating from New Jersey and New York would be consolidated in Raleigh. The new jobs, the company said at the time, would pay average salaries of more than $109,000. Arch initially planned to invest $12.9 million in Raleigh. Despite Arch Capital's action, the local office market has been on the upswing in recent weeks, and real estate developers and investors are optimistic about the region's prospects for future growth. Enrollment up slightly at North Carolina community colleges despite national trend. After dropping during the COVID-19 pandemic, overall enrollment within the North Carolina Community College system increased slightly last fall. Enrollment throughout the system was 2% higher last fall compared to the fall 2020 semester, according to numbers shared during the February 18 meeting of the State Board of Community Colleges. This bump allows an 11% enrollment drop from fall 2019 to fall 2020 due to the pandemic. The bump follows an 11% enrollment drop. Across the state, more than 525,000 students are served by the system, with many of them being part-time students. The slight enrollment bump the system experienced in the fall seems to buck national trends. According to the National Student Clearinghouse, higher education enrollment across all sectors, including two-year and four-year institutions, fell about 2.7% in fall 2021 after dropping 2.5% in 2020. More than half of the community colleges within the state system, 33 out of 58, reported enrollment increases. This overall increase can be broken down into three categories: traditional academic programs, workforce education, and basic skills education. Enrollment in traditional academic programs was 3% lower last fall compared to the fall 2020 semester, which followed a 6% drop between fall 2019 and fall 2020. But enrollment bounced back in the other two categories after significant drops. Enrollment in workforce education programs increased about 22% after experiencing a drop of the same percentage between fall 2019 and fall 2020. Similarly, enrollment in basic skills was up about 40% after dropping about 51% between fall 2019 and fall 2020. In a statement, System President Thomas Stith attributed the enrollment increases to innovations and leadership at the college level, an emphasis on workforce and apprenticeship training, and marketing efforts. "We're encouraged by the tremendous growth in workforce education programs," Stith said. And that article was written by Zach Ezone. Development could bring 900-plus new homes to city. And this is Sanford. Another huge housing development could be coming to Sanford. Plans were presented for a new residential development called Midtown Village South during a public hearing February 15. The sprawling development would include 905 new residential units spread across 288.4 acres in the eastern part of the city along Cologne and Lower Moncur Roads. The development team behind the project sought annexation into Sanford, which was approved, and also a rezoning of the land to allow for a mixture of 170 townhomes and 735 single-family homes with varying lot sizes, according to plans submitted to the city. The rezoning applicant is local developer Mark Lukowski, a frequent visitor to Sanford City Hall recently, as he's also involved with the other large housing projects like Ashby Village and Comnock Village, which will bring hundreds of new homes to Sanford in the coming years. Despite the fact that this land is not within Sanford city limits today, Lukowski notes how close it is to downtown. You think about East Sanford and you think about downtown and the money Sanford has invested in downtown. To me, this is what Sanford needs, Lukowski says. You need the infill development that is close to the proximity of downtown to generate these types of rooftops. Firms plan to merge. Triangle will feel an impact as accounting firms join forces. This article written by Laura Brumette. A North Carolina accounting firm with a presence in the Triangle recently announced its merger with a Missouri-based outfit, securing a spot among the nation's top 10 largest accounting firms. Dixon Hughes Goodman, or DHG, based in Charlotte, and BKD will combine forces as of June 1. The combined firm will operate under a new name set to be announced in the coming months and reach an estimated $1.4 billion in revenue, according to the companies, with 5,400 employees across 68 markets in 27 states. The combined firm will rank number 8 in the nation. In North Carolina, DHG has offices in Raleigh, Pinehurst, Asheville, Hendersonville, High Point, Winston-Salem, and Greenville. The combined firm's headquarters has not yet been named. BKD CEO Tom Watson will continue as CEO of the new organization, and Matt Snow, CEO of DHG, will transition to chair. Jason Wilkinson, office managing partner for the Raleigh, Pinehurst, and Greenville DHG offices, says that no leadership or staff changes are expected at the local level. All clients are expected to be retained as well, he says. While Wilkinson doesn't envision new offices in his market, he does intend to expand the current offices with talent acquisition, both from the BKD side and new hires. When the merger closes, Wilkinson says the North Carolina offices will be better positioned to help local clients due to the added resources. Wilkinson's three offices have a combined 123 employees currently. Local revenue figures and client numbers were not disclosed by DHG. The team provides audit, tax, and advisory services across industries, including healthcare, financial services, dealerships, construction, and manufacturing. The merger with BKD will allow DHG's North Carolina markets to place a bigger emphasis on higher education, a sector that Wilkinson's teams don't have significant market share in. We see that as a great benefit. That's an industry that we haven't tapped into in our Raleigh market, so I think BKD will make us better from that regard, Wilkinson says. I think we will in turn make BKD better with some of the service offerings that we have from an industry vertical perspective. Wilkinson has been at the firm since 2002 when it had around 50 employees, he says. As Raleigh has grown, so too has the firm. Data gathered by Triangle Business Journal show DHG is currently the seventh largest accounting firm in the region, with 56 local CPAs and a staff of 123. We're deeply rooted in our market. We've been serving our customers well for at least 20 years, Wilkinson says. DHG currently ranks as a top 20 firm and has over 2,000 employees in the United States and United Kingdom, according to its website. BKD was founded in 1923 and has acquired several outfits in the past few decades, leaving it with 41 offices in 19 states before the DHG merger. DHG is the Charlotte area's fourth largest accounting firm, with about 475 local employees. And with our remaining minutes, we'll turn to the small business section to read the family business column written by James Lee, who is a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline, Be Careful How You Bring Up Certain Issues. In the political arena, a hot button is any social, economic, or other issue that is sure to excite strong reactions from people on both sides of it. In a family-owned business, a hot button can be a phrase, a question, or even a facial expression that touches someone's nerve. Hot buttons are often used as power plays or control tools. When a button is pushed, even unintentionally, the reaction may be tears or anger or joy. Here are some family business hot buttons I've seen. Nephew Niles' new car. Like most other businesses, the family company was operating close to the bone when his brother announced a plan to buy his son Niles a new car with company money. Jack protested, waving the balance sheet, the current P&L, and a stack of unpaid bills, but although his brother didn't work in the business, they were equal partners, so Jack had no veto power. Now, every time nephew Niles drives his new car past the plant, Jack's hot button is pushed, and he has to take several laps around the warehouse. Haven't you finished that report yet? This works as a hot button when it's asked for the third time in one afternoon. In many cases, the asker knows the askee's compulsion to be punctual creates a vulnerability and makes this a very hot button indeed. This button can be pushed only a few times before a mushroom cloud forms. Golfing abroad. Having named his daughter president of the company, he devoted more time to his favorite pastime, golf, often at celebrated courses around the world. But as chairman, he had retained signature authority on contracts over $500,000, so when he was away on some foreign golf links, big agreements didn't get signed, and his daughter had to explain the delays to customers and suppliers. The phrase, "take a little golf trip," puts her teeth on edge, and she seriously considered throwing his clubs in the ocean. A lawyer would cost too much. That money would have been paid to attorneys to solve the company's problems with petty cash compared to the amount the company lost in labor fines, settlements with customers, and production downtime. Nevertheless, whenever a new problem reared its head, Dad took the same stand against calling for professional help. The words acted as a red-hot button on his two sons and his comptroller. They stared at Dad with their lips clamped shut. Dad looked back and said, "What?" Flex time. To the senior owner's youngest son, having the right last name and a junior executive position gave him leave to come into the office or not as it suited him. His phrase, "working out of the building," could cover anything from a round of golf to just not getting out of bed. So when he left phone messages or sent emails with those words, hot buttons clicked all over the company. The clicking became deafening when the phrase was used as an excuse for blowing off a scheduled meeting or a job applicant interview. Soon other company managers began turning the son's hot button phrase into a joke, just as they turned him into one. And we'll stop there as the last example. How many times have I heard that is actually a positive, as it's used when someone remarks on the company having issues that it may not have. And we'll have to stop right there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.